This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 244. Who's your secret crush? Hello, this is Michael Martin, one of a pair of co-hosts of GamesAtWork.biz. I'm here joined with my friend Michael for a fantastic show for all of our listening audience today. Hey, Michael, how are you?
I am doing well, and I hope both of you listening today are really going to enjoy this episode.
I'm doing terrific, Michael, and boy, do we have some neat things to share on the Games at Work podcast today, including a travel through time and space
and place.
So you found this neat thing from Open Culture about how you might experience the pre-Great Fire of 1666 London experience, which has absolutely nothing to do with Brexit. So it's nice not to talk about that for a little bit.
It was precinct.
Yeah, exactly. You know, maybe they did a prorogue or something like that. Yes, at that time. Yes. Who knows? Could be anything. But the recreation of what London looked like in the 17th century from this little video is pretty darn cool.
Yeah, it was funny because one of my friends from high school on one of their feeds had posted this link. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. This is something new. Let me dig through it. And it's actually from November 2013. So it's actually an award-winning old video of a kind of a video game virtual world build-out of early Tudor London. Mm-hmm. And what amazed me by it is really a couple of things. One, it's very close to some of the work that we were doing back in 2007, 2008 in the EBO that I was in, where we were building spaces for companies to allow them to visualize how a new product or a new environment would look like. And we really worked hard to be as realistic as possible. And so understanding the technology aspect of building out a render like this was really kind of cool. And then the second thing that I liked was just the level of detail that they did on the insides of buildings. Mm-hmm. Because they never actually go into any of the buildings, but they do a lot of flybys and looking through the glass into the building. And if you've ever looked at, you know, old glass from, you know, the 1600s, 1700s, it's uneven, it's thick, it can have hazy parts to it. And they do a really, really good job of that as they rendered out this environment. So they're like going by and looking into a pub.
Right.
And you can kind of see the different thicknesses of the glass. You can see the imperfections in the glass. You can see the stuff inside the pub.
The way the sun shines on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really high fidelity animation from that perspective. Knowing how most flames are done, you know, with particle emitters, they do some really great jobs with their particle emitters on setting the stage for what is about to become the Great Fire of London in 1666. So, you know, they zoom past torches and other things in the street and kind of ominous. So there's like a whole vibe and a feeling about it. But I just thought it was a gorgeous, gorgeous build out and gorgeous rendering. And I was really impressed by it. It kind of brought back good memories.
It is pretty cool. I was just reading the rest of the article here too, because I was curious to know what kind of engine that they were using in here. While it doesn't say, what it does say that they did, this came as a prize for this off the map contest from mm-hmm. the British Library, and that was you know, a way of taking real maps and real representations and then making them come to life. So to
speak. They use the CryEngine for it.
Ah, okay, okay. Oh, there it says video game developers Game City and Crytek.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so there's actually a blog post that you can link into and see information for the guys who actually built it.
Neat.
And I mean guys as in the generic term, because it's guys and gals, I guess.
Yes. Sort of New Jersey version of guys.
Yeah. Yes. Use guys.
Yeah. No, I like it. Very cool.
Very, very, very cool. Nice.
So if one of the team that was working really hard on this particular app, you know, day in and day out, you know, nights, weekends, whatever, if they were to have, say, a particular secret crush on one of their coworkers, Facebook now is allowing them to let them know. So let's chat a little bit about this. One of the things that came across my feed, this one from 9to5 Mac, deals with some new capabilities that Facebook is adding directly to the main app itself. So this is not going to be launched separate as a different standalone app within this Facebook suite of apps like Instagram and others. It's going to be directly mainline, and the dating aspects will allow Facebook to look across your friend network, allow you to potentially let a secret crush know that there is a secret crush someone in their friend network who knows them. They won't be able to figure out who, but if they have a secret crush themselves back on that friend, then there's a connection to be made. So it's kind of an interesting thing here about how Facebook is taking a step forward into the dating space that other apps do for a variety of other reasons, and deepening their social network data that they're able to mine into and use for all kinds of other advertising and other purposes. So it was an interesting article. I hadn't realized that dating was one of the next things that's coming out in the Facebook space.
Yeah, this is actually interesting. They actually piloted it in many, many countries over the last year or so before they brought it to the U.S. this month. And there's been a lot of talk about this on various other podcasts and feeds for some time. Matter of fact, the guys over at the Daily Tech News Show actually did a really good deep dive on it on Wednesday's show, I believe it was, or last night's show. The unique aspect of it is the fact that they have this secret crush part, which, you know, I don't, thank God I'm not dating. I'm glad I don't live in this world. I just don't understand it. The idea is you already know the people in your list. And if you want to be introduced to a friend of a friend, you can do that normally. The secret crush aspect is you're not really going to say anything unless they say something, but they're not going to really say anything. And if you both not say anything, but kind of put it on each other's list, then it'll introduce you. And kind of the reverse stalking aspect of this is, you know, it will introduce you to people who are going to the same events as you that you don't know in any way, shape, or connection to build more connections in Facebook. And it does it based off of the Facebookiness of you, which I guess if you were in a dating app, wouldn't you just use a dating app which says these are people that I'm interested in, this very specific type of things, and then have it match on that? I just don't get it. I don't get this one at all. And yeah.
Well, I, you
just
know,
not my world, I guess.
it may not be, and it's not my world either, right? So, you know, let's get that out in the open here too. So I can't speak with any authority here, not having used these other apps, but the things that struck me were the Facebookiness of it all. So yeah. For people that live within the Facebook platform and ecosystem, Facebook knows a lot about you, and it may recognize things that maybe you don't even recognize about yourself. And for the shyer people, which probably a lot of people fall into that kind of a bucket, right? There's two kinds of people in the world, right? Those who make broad sweeping generalizations and everybody else.
And everybody else.
That you may find some interesting connections that you didn't really know before, right? So if you're always talking about whatever it is that you talk about on Facebook. Playing games at work, you know, for all the fans of our particular Facebook web, page and so on, you know, that might be a level of connection. And that's too obvious, but maybe somebody is talking about that they really love board games or that they are excessive snowboarders when they get a chance, and they only get a chance to do that infrequently. That Facebook, because of the deep learning that they have and recognition of one thing connects to another, might actually introduce people that here's why you might want to connect with someone else. I don't know. I mean, I've been personally off of Facebook for a while, so I can't speak with a lot of authority on Facebook either.
I mean, you're not engaging with all our fans over our Facebook page.
Luckily, I've got automations that help with that particular.
So we, just to let everybody know, we use bots to interact with you on our Facebook page,
and our bots are great.
Yeah,
they're all kinds of
sympathetic. They awesome. They have sentiment analysis. They respond.
If I take it at the surface level of helping people connect with other people on a layer that's maybe a little more personal, right? Yeah. than what Facebook does ordinarily. This could be an interesting thing. And the whole crush thing I took as actually a neat way to make sure that there's not a stalkery kind of aspect around this too.
Yeah. Right? Well, I it was funny as you were talking about the Facebook ecosystem, my brain went to the Facebook icky system.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, and the whole idea of dating apps, especially Facebook as a dating app, just got it into the icky system for me.
Pretty funny. I'm looking right now because I had an email that came in just recently by the folks who make Swarm and Foursquare and the like, that they've changed some of their terms and privacy, and mm-hmm. they acquired a company called Placed LLC earlier this year, and they do mobile apps that allow consumers to earn rewards and points for answering surveys about where they are, which kind of fits in with what the Foursquare space and Place do. Mm-hmm. And what I further saw is that there was a another app that they have right now, in addition to Swarm and Foursquare, called Marsbot. And I remember looking them up.
Where you check in on Mars?
Well, no, it's not. It's actually something a little bit different. I looked at this yesterday, and Marsbot has the ability here to recommend places to go based on what it learns around you. So as long as we're talking about bots and mm-hmm. about learning about you and then interacting with you, this one is like Marsbot will send you great recommendations based on what you like, right? So it's suggesting one of the pictures here is like, hey, after dinner at such and thus, I like to grab a drink at this other place that's right nearby. And mm-hmm. what Marsbot does is it allows you to have it understand places you're checking in, what you're sharing, recommendations you're making, and then now reflect those back into you, taking the wisdom of a broader set of crowds and serving it up to you. So cool. I kind of look at Marsbot in a little bit of the same way as the Facebook dating is trying to do with its particular focus on dating versus on where might you want to get your next meal or where would be a good drink to have, because Marsbot is able to determine that you like, old fashions, or you like a good Pilsner, and great places that people really talk about Pilsners all the time are right near you. You just didn't know, and Untappd doesn't get you there, and maybe Foursquare doesn't get you there because you weren't particularly looking at that.
Very cool.
Yeah, I hadn't encountered them before, and it's like I didn't know that there was this new placed acquisition, and I didn't know about MarsBot either. So, neat stuff. Let's switch gears, though, shall we?
Yes.
Let's do something a little musical.
Yes.
And let's do something a little Lego, and let's do something a little Star Wars, which, gosh, you know, how often do we do things around Star Wars here? Not that much.
No, never.
Hardly ever.
What? Never? Hardly ever?
So would you like to hear the Star Wars theme?
Only if it's done by droids. Oh.
I was going to say, of course you do. Of course you do. So this video, you both of us had this one served up to us because I guess our bots know about it and they wanted to share and show this sort of deal. Uses Lego robots to play musical instruments. And this droid army of an orchestra plays the Star Wars theme by interacting with keyboards and violins and cellos and bells and all kinds of cool, fun stuff. And you watched the making of for this.
Yes. Yeah. So Sam Battle, who is over at the site Look Mum No Computer, is the kind of the technical producer of this whole thing, putting it all together, working with Lego to build out the orchestra. And he goes through in detail kind of how each of the sounds were figured out. Like there's one point where they dump a bunch of ball bearings down a little chute onto a drum. Mm-hmm. In order to get a certain sound that's in the orchestra. The precision of which they had to set up the various R2 units so that the lifting and dropping of the xylophone stick is done timed correctly, because what really happens is that droid, the head rotates and it causes an arm to turn, and that turn then is attached to another thing that lifts the stick and drops it. So there's all this detail behind it, you know, how they figure out all the different parts, etc. And it's really cool. It took them, as he said, 5 sleepless nights or 5 all-nighters to go through setting the whole environment up.
That's
and
just nuts.
It's pretty awesome. I highly recommend that you don't just
3,000 hours.
You don't just watch the things playing, but watch the behind the scenes video. It's about 18 minutes long, if I remember correctly, and it will actually take you through all the deets.
Just nuts. I mean, just the amount of energy that went into this thing, and the enthusiasm.
Oh yes, definitely. He definitely has the enthusiasm down.
Yeah, is absolutely there.
But now, if you're into droids.
If you're into droids and you've got, you know, a couple thousand hours of time on your hands.
And I'm guessing probably a couple of $1,000 on your hands.
Well, no, all you need is 700, which is actually, I think it's cheaper than the Millennium Falcon.
Well, shoot. It's $100 cheaper than the Millennium Falcon. Come on.
There is a new Lego set coming out called the Devastator. And
it's a Star Destroyer, right?
It is, and I think the email I got on it, I think called it the Devastator, but it is a Star Destroyer.
Yeah,
and it is 4,784 pieces.
Are there any leftover pieces when you're done? That's the key.
Well, you get the minifigs, which is great.
That's important.
And you get, of course, the Rebel ship. You know, so
yes, which just shows you the scale.
Yes. Because that is like the teensiest little ship compared to the top one, and I was, you know, trying to get a sense of where the minifigs themselves would actually be, because I don't know where they would go, right?
Maybe they're at the dry dock, looking on to work on it.
They gotta be,
because
you know
when they show them scale. When they show them, they're actually on the stand. They're down at the bottom on the stand next to the label.
Yeah, because you could not build a ship like this at minifig scale.
No, because there'd have to be hundreds of those minifigs in the Rebel ship.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the box, did you see the box?
Yeah.
I wonder if they have the same sort of thing where they have like a special, you know, remember when they came out with the Millennium Falcon the first time they, or the big box version, they actually had like a hand truck that would come along with it.
Wow.
So that you could get it home.
No, I've never gone into buying the big kits like this.
Mm.
I would really enjoy them, but I had no place to actually set them up.
Well, so I've struggled with that too, because I have a few fun sets that I've really enjoyed building, and I'd like to be able to display them. And unfortunately, you know, I guess unless I get some like dedicated shelving,
yep.
I don't have a good place to put them.
No,
which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
So I've got my on my desk here. I've got my little Lego Architecture Berlin set here that mm-hmm, I've got mm-hmm. with me. So that's nifty neato. I've got maybe one or two other little things around here on my desk, but that's about as much room as I've got. And then my desk is such a wreck anyway.
I understand that.
So I guess I need to build virtual Lego or maybe not.
Maybe not. But speaking of games.
Oh yeah.
You found something about Untitled Goose Game.
Yeah.
What the heck is this?
Okay, so I don't know a lot about this, okay. But there's an Australian company that has been working on a new game for the last 3 years, and it's supposed to come out on September 20th, which is not that far away, and it is called Untitled Goose Game, and it looks to me that the way this works is you got to go and chase a goose around that takes things from the villagers, and then you've got to capture them. And they are doing a full multimedia structure around this where you can buy all kinds of game kit, you know, so you could wear some goose socks that you can use for sock puppets or put them on your feet. There's all kinds of cute goose, other wearables that you might like to have or find too. I'm not sure I understand why people are thinking this is like the biggest, greatest thing, but
you mean the bee's knees?
The goose's honk. You know, will the Untitled Goose Game be the golden goose for this Australian company?
No.
We shall see.
Yeah, I always worry when I see any article about people losing their mind or you won't believe, because 99 times out of 100, I don't believe that I'm reading the article. But yeah, I guess the interesting part here is
it's cute.
It's a cute little game, right? I don't know all the mechanics. They don't give much in the trailer other than there's a little goose and you're chasing him down because he stole your remote control or whatever. But the real question is, you know, how I like the idea of crowdsourcing the name for your game. I think that's cool. And that's really how I read the article.
Goosey McGooseface?
What?
Goosey McGooseface?
Yeah, that's it. Or you could call it Ryan Gosling.
Ah.
Anyway, but I mean, it's kind of a cool looking game. It looks kind of fun. I like the add-ins. That makes fun. A lot of people do add-ins to their games nowadays. I mean, you and I both played Exploding Kittens.
Yep.
And they've got a lot of add-ins.
And my kids
to that.
Love them too. That's just they have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah. So I mean, it's a neat design, and maybe, given that it's coming out on September 20th. Now, unfortunately, it's coming out for the Switch on the 20th, right?
Yeah.
I was hoping that date meant it was going to be part of the new Apple Arcade.
Ooh. Well, that would be good fun, but it looks like it is a Nintendo Switch console and PC game versus something that would exist in a mobile environment, which,
well, an Apple Arcade is all those games are Apple Arcade exclusives, I think, to start with.
Ah, mm-hmm.
So, but we'll find out next Tuesday.
Or will we?
Or will we? Dun, dun, dun.
What's going on next Tuesday?
Well, what I'm hoping goes on next Tuesday is that we find out that I can finally submit to the App Store my brand new app, Wasted Time for Watch OS, which is a native Watch OS app, does not require an iPhone, allows to be installed directly on your watch to track the cost of meetings.
No way.
Way. No, next Tuesday is the Apple announcement, which everyone is expecting, you know, new iPhones, new Apple Watch, rumors about a possible new MacBook Pro, rumors about that they'll give the announce date or the launch date for their Apple TV Plus service, their Apple
Maybe
Arcade
Apple
service. There's rumors about the Apple AR glasses that have showed up in some of the source code lately, which would be kind of cool if that was their one more thing. But we'll have to see. I'm looking forward to it. And I know some of our listeners, not all of them, but some of our listeners are Apple fans and will probably be logged into the event on the 10th.
You know, if you needed a reminder of that, how might you get a reminder of this event happening?
Well, I think we will have a copy of a tweet in our show notes from Apple that if you like that tweet, Apple will send you a reminder with a link to actually show the video in real time.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would. I used it last year. It worked out quite well.
So I saw something about a possibility of a new Apple TV box as well, which could be also interesting. Although, quite frankly, my N-2 generation Apple TV is working like a champ, and I'm loving that as well.
Yeah, I have the one that's pre the talking remote control, right? The slick control, the one that you keep dropping and losing and stuff, and you can't figure out which way to point it. I have the one before that, and it just keeps chugging along.
Yeah, so I'm very interested to see all the things that are going to be coming out in the Apple sphere next week. It'll be intriguing,
yes,
in a lot of ways. All right, so now that we've touched on that, and I can't wait to see your native watch installable app too, because that'll be way cool to be able to.
They have not enabled yet for me to submit it to the App Store, which they usually do a week or so before you can actually buy the new iOS devices and pick them up. So I expect probably Tuesday afternoon to get the note that I can submit the app to the App Store.
Hmm. Okay, cool. So that potentially, that could happen pretty fast. And typically new versions of iOS, watchOS, tvOS, et cetera, come out day of, so we'll see how fast that happens, because I would love to be able to do Wasted Time directly from my watch too.
Yes, me too. Oh, I can. I've been doing it for some time now, and it's really cool.
So, friend of the show,
yes,
sort of, is actually going to be in RTP soon.
Yes,
a person that we've both met.
Yes,
and I want to say thank you for pointing this out to me, because I did not know that she was coming.
I didn't think you
knew. But neither do our listening audience about what might happen in October at NC State. So can you clue them in?
I will right now. So Felicia Day, who for those who remember The Guild, she was the writer, director, and star of the Guild. She's done television. She's done a whole podcast network that did video podcasts for a while.
Dr. Horrible.
She did Dr. Horrible, yes. And she's written a couple of books. Her most recent one is called Embrace Your Weird. She is doing a book signing tour and auditorium gig October 7th. At 7 p.m. at the James B. Hunt Junior Library at NC State. Tickets are $17, and they'll throw in a copy of the book.
That's super cool. Love it.
Yeah. So I think I actually have the book, and I think I've already read it.
or it's in that big pile of things.
Yes, there is a big pile still.
Yeah, I have that file as well.
But you will be traveling next week, so we probably will not be having a show next week. But I hope you have a safe and enjoyable trip, and that you come back with some great games to talk about and some great stories for our next edition of Games at Work. Biz. See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.